Croydonus presents
Tales of Croydonia,
brought to you by the Open Tavern, Croydon.
Apocalypse in Croydopolis by Jenny Lockyer. Part 1. Night. Dustbin rattles. It's chucking out time at Bad Apple.
Wendy, go! Go now and get home.
Where have you got to go?
Egypt.
Not yet, Wendy. Where have you got to go now?
Slatton.
Let's get you a cab.
Meanwhile, Mr. Strange and Mr. Kinch are making their way homeward from the Black Sheep. They pass a group of young women gathered around a friend on the pavement. They seem to be giving her the kiss of life.
Clear out time at the Dragon, too. Big Kev's trying to move on the same drunk pensioner he's moved on 3 times already this evening.
Oh, he's not moving!
Esther, tired but shrewd, can see there's something not quite right.
Kev, he's dead. And half his leg's missing.
Suddenly the drunk's body jerks awkwardly, falling from the stool.
Crunching.
Breaking.
Kev blinks nervously as he grabs a dishcloth.
What the fluff?
Kev, it's a fluffing zombie.
What the...
The zombie lunges forward to take a chunk out of Kev's leg, but Esther's carved a steak from one of the new menu boards and sends it cleanly through its eye.
Back in Wendy's cab.
Excuse me, driver, can we go via a cash machine? Oh, I need some notes.
It's on the meter, darling.
Twat.
The cab pulls up outside Nat West and Wendy makes a quick withdrawal of a tenner. Turning back towards the cab, she sees a man with dead eyes and lolling tongue lunge into the cabbie's window, taking a huge bloody chunk out of his neck.
Oi! That's my fluffing cabbie, you twat crack!
She moves like lightning over to the cabbie's assailant and whacks him with her bag, containing her work shoes and a heavy file of people she knows. She's pissed, but she knows a zombie when she sees one.
Fluffing zombie twat crack!
The cabbie dribbles a mouthful of his own blood onto Wendy's jacket.
And you can fluff off, she screams. New bloody jacket! How am I going to get to Slatton now?
She moves at quite a pace towards the Dragon, but as she reaches the taxi rank, she sees Esther at the front door of the pub, holding back a flailing bloody doorman with a bar stool.
Zombies, says Wendy. It's the fluffing apocalypse.
End of part one. Part two. 2:30 a.m. Wendy is wide awake. It's a humid, sticky summer's evening. But that is not the reason she cannot sleep. A year since it happened, and the events of 12 months ago still feel raw, bloody, fleshy. She flicks on her phone. Why nothing on the news about the first year anniversary? It's like it's being swept away, like something dirty you don't want to see, into a corner, or over the fence, and onto the railway embankment. And that's where it had finished for many of them. That night, that stinking night when Wendy and her friends had fought off the seething Crombie horde with their fists, nails, chairs, handbags and ponytails. Well, Kev's ponytail. Crombies! That had been Mr. Strange's word for the Croydon undead. Wendy's eyes glaze slightly as she remembers her friend Gab's account of his last meeting with Mr. Strange. Exactly 1 year previously. Since leaving the Black Sheep Bar, Strange and Kinch have made it all of 30 yards down the road. Kinch is perplexed.
Yeah, sounds good, mate. But I've got an early one. I've got to sit and make dry, sarcastic comments during someone's recording session tomorrow.
This I know, says Mr. Strange. The complete works of Cronenberg Incorporated can wait.
I say, Mr. Kinch, isn't that Esther attacking a good member of the public?
Mr. Strange has spotted the famous landlady of the Green Dragon glassing a groaning clubber with a bottle of Hophead.
Yeah, I think so.
What?
Just then, their attention is drawn to a gaggle of lopsided ladies stumbling from the doorway of Greg's.
Fluffin' hell, says Gav. They look a bit pissed off that Greg's is shut. Looks like they've had the last of the donuts, though.
Like Kinch, Mr. Strange notices red stickiness oozing from their gaping mouths. He gestures to one of the ladies and says in the style of a 1940s police constable,
"A spot of jam, madam."
Her reply is somewhat guttural. Suddenly, in the glow of the streetlight, the men realise the danger they are in.
"I've just realised the danger we're in," says Kinch.
He scratches his chin, wishing they weren't in all of this danger. But Mr. Strange, ever since he was a little strange, has had imaginings of this very kind of situation. Nights spent wide awake, drawing little pictures on his laptop of zombie maulings and alien autopsies, of virus-ridden apes and atomic warfare between legions of armies on some unrecognisable earth.
"We must fight them off, Mr. Kinch. Our lives depend on it."
"I'm at the studio early tomorrow," thinks Kinch.
Mr. Strange turns to his friend.
"Find a weapon."
"What?"
"Weapons! We need weapons!"
"Why can't we just go round them?"
Mr. Strange punches one of the leering women.
"Ha ha! We'll be back, Crombie!"
"Crombie?"
"Yep. And look, they're all over the place!"
Kinch looks and can definitely concur that Crombies are indeed all over the place. He scratches his chin and wishes they weren't all over the place. Strange suddenly cries out, jubilantly,
"Crombies! Bring it on!"
And they run. Kinch is scared. Strange is ready for war. Between them both, and for very different reasons, a little bit of wee comes out. And now, Wendy closes her eyes. Quiz night tonight at the Oval. Normal business. Normal day.
Crombies? What Crombies? No Crombies here.
She had breathed a sigh of relief when Esther had moved to the Oval Tavern at the end of last summer. She wants to forget, but her mind skips suddenly to the memory of Kev and Esther and herself holed up in the Dragon. She had counted 20 bodies at the front door, and the image of Kev crying would haunt her forever.
"Sob, sob, sob," cries Kev.
Esther is angry now. She would have shut the doors, but she wants to help people. People who weren't already dead and lunging at her neck for a quick snack, that is. But an hour of defending her pub against flesh-hungry, life-guzzling killers has taken its toll. The number of attackers seem to be increasing despite their valiant attempts at a cull.
"Kev, this is fluffing stupid. I haven't even checked on the kids, and there's just more and more of them."
"I thought you only had 2 kids, Esther."
"I'm talking about the zombies, Kev."
"Ah!"
She rams a pool cue into the open mouth of a member of the Green Dragon knitting circle. It exits her head just in time to spear another up its nostril.
"Oh, God," Esther yells. "That was Matt. He looks after the fruit machines."
Suddenly, a piercing screech cuts through the groans and the moans and the gnashing of jaws.
"Ow! Get off me, you twat crack!" "Wendy? Oh my God, get the fluff inside!"
Suddenly, 2 snarling flesh munchers make a lunge at Wendy from either side. Kev screams, but Wendy makes an expert entry into their eye sockets with her index fingers and in celebration flings herself onto the growing pile of bodies building outside the doors of the Dragon. Kev pulls her up.
"Wendy, that was amazing."
At this point, Esther finally gives in to the need to survive and the doors to the Dragon close. The 3 of them fall back inside against it, panting.
It crosses Esther's mind, no one put the dishwasher on.
Kev suddenly thinks out loud,
"Esther, you're a vegetarian."
"Yep."
If you ever got bitten and, you know,
became one of them?
"Yep. Would you still be a vegetarian?"
"I don't know. I'd like to think so, but probably not."
A pause while they catch their breath and listen to the thumps and groans from outside.
Do you want me to try and help you be a vegetarian zombie? If it ever happened?
Esther turns to face him.
That's really thoughtful. I think I'd like that.
From the floor of the pub, Esther looks up and notices a stray, slightly wrinkly, helium balloon clinging to the ceiling and is suddenly aware her children are upstairs somewhere. Wendy stands up.
We need to herd them all together. We need to get them away to the other end of the high street. We need to get them into a position of vulnerability.
What would you know about that, Wendy? Asks Kev.
Wendy, says Esther. There must be hundreds of them out there by now. How are we going to do it?
With this,
a voice calls to them from the top of the stairs. Sam makes a bold jump from the banister and lands like only a 10-year-old boy can, while holding a fully operational bazooka made entirely from Lego.
It can fire real meat!
Wow, sweetheart, you've been busy, says Esther.
A smile crosses her face for the first time in a few hours.
Wendy, you were great,
Sam calls to her.
Sam, where's your sister? Says Esther, getting up.
She's upstairs defrosting loads of chicken in the microwave. We'll need it. Damn right,
affirms Wendy, who passes her phone to Kev.
What do I want your phone for?
Call the Fluffin' Army.
All right. What's their number, though?
Scroll down to Clive. He's in the army.
Right.
He owes me a favour or two. Oh, fluffing zombie twat cracks. How far does that thing fire, Sam?
Sam's sister Amy suddenly appears with a huge bucket of part defrosted chicken.
Let's find out, she says, passing Sam a fleshy bit of meat,
which he then places deftly in the firing chamber of the ingenious weapon. Kev is through to Clive.
Hello, is that the army? Sorry to call so late. My name's Kevin, a friend of Wendy's. Oh, that rhymes, kind of. I'm a barman at the Green Dragon in Croydon, and I was wondering if you could possibly come over to assist in...
Fluffin' hell, Kev!
Wendy says, grabbing the phone from him and speaking to Clive directly.
Clive, get round here with your mates. We need you. Zombies, apocalypse. We're heading to West Croydon. I know, Clive, but this is that massive favour you owe me. Get here now. Sam, get onto Kev's shoulders. Esther, can we open this window?
Yep, there's a knack.
Esther picks up a bar stool and with some kind of Amazonian strength hurls it at the upper panel of glass, smashing right through it with extraordinary accuracy.
Awesome wells, says Amy, proudly uttering only the first in a long line of film-stroke-literature-based superlatives.
In no time at all, Sam has fired the first bit of shiny dripping chicken into the throng of the teeth-gnashing deceased.
Whatever this is, says Wendy, calmly but firmly.
It ends tonight, says Esther.
And it had. Wendy blinks back some tears. Sam's amazing Lego bazooka had successfully launched bits of chicken at strategic points and the dead had been lured along the high street, with Amy, Esther, Wendy and Kev pushing them along from behind with hoardings from a nearby shopfront. The herd, which must have been a couple of hundred, maybe three, had been forced along the high street, falling over random bits of street furniture, groaning and biting, not unlike a crowd of Croydon shoppers in a Primark sale. But nevertheless, they had been spurred on by Sam's chicken bait. On reaching the tram lines at West Croydon, a certain amount of manoeuvring had had to be done, but after much cursing and flicking of Kev's ponytail, the horde had been forced through the chain-link fence and down onto the railway tracks. Clive had arrived with his army mates around about then, and the sound of guns blazing sounded like 1,000 arcade machines. As Esther allowed herself to look around, she saw Sam and Amy retreat slightly to allow Wendy's army to finish off the job they had started. And at this point, Mr. Kinch had arrived. The Crombies. You've killed all the Crombies.
Crombies? Said Kev.
Strange has coined a new name. Have you seen him?
Sorry, mate, we haven't.
How did you get them all down the high street?
Sam invented a Lego bazooka that can fire raw meat, said Kev. Does anyone else think that's quite alarming?
Wendy tries to sleep, but she is uneasy. She tries to reassure herself by finding YouTube footage of Galvin Bungalow, local MP, making a public announcement on the steps of the clock tower. The council had taken most of the credit for the dispatching of the unfortunate dead. In the days that followed, new signs went up all over town. Apocalypse abated, thanks to Croydon Bid. Contamination contained, thanks to Croydon Bid. On site, on our way with Crombie free affordable housing. But they never revealed why the whole thing had happened in the first place. Wendy finally finds Bungalow's triumphant speech.
This town will survive, says Bungalow. We need to invest in what is good.
Wendy is not sure if he is aware of the two blokes behind him carrying the projector from the David Lean cinema out of the building and placing it in the back of a Croydon Council van. As Wendy watches the abysmal display of political distraction, Gavin is only just finishing up a day's work.
Great session, Gav. Thanks for having us.
The fresh-faced drummer stands at the doorway of Rocket Studio and shakes Gav's hand weakly. Poor grip. No commitment. Just like his drum playing. But, ever the professional, Gav sees him and the rest of his band off the premises politely. As he shuts the door after them, locking it, he hears raised voices and scuffling. Shrieks of pain and thumping. Something tearing. Gav opens the door again and pokes his head into the night, warily. And he sees the band being... eaten? Gav, incredulous, cranes to see the scene. A lone arm lays in the curb, two fingers, twitching. Looking over to the parked car, still with boot open and kit half-packed, Gav sees the band. They're pinned to the ground by four or five writhing people. People who look crazed, hungry. Their jaws are two arteries short of ripping the life from the musicians, and though Gav wants to help, he knows there's nothing he can do. Gav scratches his chin and thinks, there's nothing I can do. He's seen it all before, 12 months ago. He stands back from the window and reaches for his phone. He wishes he'd had some kind of useful bit of advice for the band as they'd said their goodbyes. It rings twice before Wendy answers.
All right, Gav.
Wendy, not sure how to tell you this. It's happening again. It's horrible. It's...
isn't finished, says Wendy.
Gav hears cold, hard determination in her voice.
Stay there, Gav. I'm coming over.